You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Syria, like many other Middle Eastern nations, has seen a large popular uprising calling for democratic reform over the last few months. And while the violent crackdown of the Assad regime against its people continues, Canada and other nations have begun imposing sanctions against Syria. The civilian death toll now exceeds 1,000 since the mass protests started in March. Afra Jalabi is a journalist, a PhD student at Concordia University, and a member of the Syria Collective Montreal. She joins us by phone from Montreal. Good morning, Afra.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you for joining us. Now, before we talk about the protests, can you fill us in a little bit on the recent political history of Syria?
Yes. Well, there was a military coup in 1963, and that was during the post-colonial period when Syria was actually trying to create a democratic system, and there were several elected presidents, and some even resigned when there was a little demonstration in the city of Aleppo. So there was some kind of a civil society movement during that period. And then in 1963, the army took over. And in 1970, Hafez al-Assad did another military coup against his own friends. He was the Minister of Defense then. And since then, Syria has been living under the reign of this family. And the country was handed down to his younger son when the older son died, the one who was being groomed in a car accident. And that was 11 years ago. So so for the past 41 years, Syria has been in the grip of one family that has really taken the nation as a hostage.
Now, in terms of the recent protests, March 18th is when the protests started gaining the attention of people in the international community. What was going on in the ground in Syria leading up to March 18th?
Well, you see, there has been a lot of oppression and imprisonments and that sort of thing that were going on. And there were little signs of protest in solidarity with Egypt or with Libya, for example, which were where the protesters in Damascus, for example, were beaten by security agents. But what happened, for example, I'll give you some specific examples to show you what the Syrian regime was trying to do. After the revolution in Tunisia and Egypt, the Syrian regime was, I think, trying to show the population that it was not scared. And however, what it did was also very provocative. So, for example, on February 11th, Mubarak fell down. He stepped down. Their regime fell down. And on February 14th, the Syrian regime chooses to give a nice Valentine gift to the Syrian people by actually sentencing a young prisoner, a blogger called Tal al-Maluhi, who was taken into custody at age 17 2 years earlier, into 5 years of imprisonment as a message, I think, to the Syrian people that we're not scared. A five-year sentence and in a closed military trial. And then, during that period, what they also do is they imprison a group of nine-year-olds. We hear that they were about 25 kids, fourth graders, nine-year-old boys, who shouted during recess time at school, down with the regime or down with the system, which was a slogan that was heard by all Arab TV stations during the Egyptian Revolution and the Tunisian Revolution. Even my kids chant that slogan. Every Arab kid who hears it, because it rhymes, everybody has been saying it. So they take them into custody, and after 2-3 weeks, the families are going back and forth trying to bring back the kids, and they are constantly met with insulting remarks, and they're told that you will not get back your kids. And eventually they get back the kids, but the families were getting several reports confirming that the kids were severely tortured, including the removal of nails from some kids. And I'm not still sure, but it seems two kids have also died. And so that actually what sparks the revolution in the city of Daraa, because these kids were from Daraa. So that's when the large marches actually start going out into the streets.
I know the Syrian government lifted a 48-year state of emergency in April, but that failed to appease people. Why not?
Well, because actually the emergency law was not lifted by the regime, even though the regime announced it. The situation was lifted by the people themselves, because under martial law you can't congregate, and the people have been congregating on the streets, so literally they practically lifted that. However, when the regime lifted the martial law, what they did was sent the army and unleash waves of terror into the country. So, for example, a few days ago, a family in a small town near Daraa received the body of their missing child, who was taken actually by security forces, a 13-year-old boy called Hamza Al-Khatib, who was severely tortured and with bullet shots and with his private parts removed. They give the body back to the family. So you wonder why they're doing this. And it's the security forces. And the body seems to have been in the morgue for the whole past month. And so why are they doing this? My own interpretation is that the Syrian people have been committed to nonviolence in an incredibly powerful, inspiring way. And the Syrian regime is losing ground, because the more it commits crimes, it is losing its face morally, internationally, on so many levels. And so it's trying to provoke the people to carry arms. We heard stories that some security forces left arms lying on the streets, and the people actually gathered them, piled them up, put them back in front of security forces buildings. And then, for example, 2 days ago on Syrian national TV, you have an interview with Sheikh Al-Sayasne, who is the imam of Al-Umari Mosque in Daraa, who actually had to give himself up and surrender himself to the security agents. 2 weeks ago, they killed his 20-year-old son in front of their home. They were asking, because the father was being hunted by the security agents, and so they asked the son about the whereabouts of his father, which probably he didn't know. They shot him right there in front of their home, the 20-year-old boy. And he has other sons, so they took his two other sons and a bunch of other young men from Daraa, and they sent a message to the sheikh, to the imam, that if you do not give yourself up, we will kill both your sons and the rest of the other young men. So Sheikh Al-Sayasne gives himself up, and 2 days ago he appears on Syrian TV, where he's saying, yes, we're armed, yes, we are horrible, they were mistakes, you know, like you see. And to me, I watching that, I was actually tearing up watching him, because this man has, this old man, he's actually blind. He gave himself up to the authorities, and there is a Syrian veteran journalist interviewing him. Imagine, I mean, the travesty of the situation. And you basically have medieval tactics, Galileo, actually, on the stand. For me now, he has become the Galileo of Syria, because he is actually is being to confess to crimes that didn't happen, because he wants to save, you know, the children and the children of many other families.
I know in the past that the Syrian leader Assad has styled himself as a kind of reformist, but I mean, the protests, as you say, have largely been peaceful, but the government has been particularly brutal. What's going on? How do you explain that contradiction?
Well, when he came into power, I think, if you know the Godfather trilogy, you know, the young son, because the older son who was being groomed dies in a car accident, so the young son who goes to study ophthalmology in London is brought back to rule the country. So he makes some sort of a promise to the Syrian people. A couple of years ago, actually, he was interviewed on Al Jazeera after about 9 years of his reign, and Al Jazeera actually point blank asks him, you have done none of that. And he actually gets furious, and he says, look, I did not make promises. I just provided a vision for Syria. I did not make a promise. He says, be careful. I did not say the word promise when I said those things. He's actually a talker. He's a babble mouth, and he has no substance, actually. As a person, you feel that he's not well-read. He's not, the way he talks in a kind of very outdated way. He sounds to me like, you know, as if he was a kid brought under Soviet tactics, because he talks about conspiracy, the enemies of the state. It's a very outdated discourse. And the man is really, I mean, you can tell that he grew up in his father's house, who really used that kind of discourse, and very, very, really outdated and passé, and that has no resonance really with any educated, intelligent person. So of course, you know, like now even, you know, other people are saying, look, you know, he promised blah, 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 but, you know, I can tell you I can fly. I mean, I can say anything. And any kid in Syria knows what Assad is standing for at the moment, because, you know, he says something and he does something else. He says, you know, we're reformers, and he sends armies to siege cities and to actually imprison children. What I find as a mother and as, you know, as a woman, I find it personally outrageous the way they have been targeting children. Because even, you know, as I told you earlier, the revolution was sparked by the imprisonment of children. And I think the Syrian regime is trying to send a double message that we will stand short of nothing, that we do not subscribe to any international or universal values in maintaining power, our grip on power, but also trying to provoke the people to defend themselves and to raise arms. There's a story, actually, at some point in Daraa, a man started shouting in the plaza that after they had committed a massacre, that let's defend ourselves, are we cowards? And he was calling on the people, and the people jumped actually on him to shut him up, and he turned out actually, when they searched him, he was actually a security agent. So the people in Syria, I'm quite inspired and amazed and in awe how committed they have been to nonviolence. And the people actually have learned that any use of violence actually works to the advantage of their regime, the advantage of their regime that wants to actually use any means to justify its own crushing. And at the moment, you know, it's like the mud is settling down. All the evil of the regime is really, really becoming more and more obvious to the world. And the Syrian people are gaining so much power from their moral stance and their commitment to nonviolence. And this is what I hope that comes out more and more in Western media, in their coverage of the Syrian revolution. Although, unfortunately, as we know, the Syrian regime has not allowed any international media into the regime. And we know that the Canadian journalist who worked for English Al Jazeera was kidnapped at the borders and was delivered to Iran, and who was later released.
I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on the show.
We've been speaking with Afra Jalabi, a journalist, PhD student at Concordia University, and a member of the Syria Collective, Montreal.